Well, good morning again, everybody. How are you this morning? It's great to see you. Did you get some caffeine in you? Caffeine plus the Holy Spirit is a really good way to start your Sunday morning. It's great to see you. Hey, great to see so many of you walking in your summer dresses and your shorts. I'm so happy that summer is upon us. Is anybody excited that summer is here? Yes. Hallelujah. Fired up my grill yesterday. I'm going to tell you what, I'm a happy man. So it is great to see you. Please do come hang out with us at Bar Taco, like Jeff said, right across the parking lot. It's a very inexpensive, cool place to just hang out. So just come chill with us after church. Hopefully we can get a few tables together. If not, we'll just scatter all over the place and just take over Bar Taco. You can meet somebody new. If you're single and available, who knows, you might meet a cute, significant other potentially. So just come hang out with us, okay? It's going to be a great time right after service. And if you'd like to, stick around, help us break down so we can get out of here and we'll all go over there together, okay? Well, today we are concluding a series that we've been in, an 8-part series called Beautiful. This has been a great series. It's really impacted my life to be able to teach it. And we're going to wrap the series up today. If you missed some of the messages, I want to encourage you to go to our website, redemptioncommunitychurch.org. You can get caught up on any of the messages from this series. But today we're going to bring it on home. We're going to conclude with the last part of the series. But first, I want to talk to you about some of the greatest marketing blunders of all time. How many of you have seen any of the Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movies? Any Tom Cruise fans? There were three of them, right? Part one, part two. I saw part one. I don't know, part two and part three weren't so great in my opinion. But back in, I believe it was 2006, when Paramount Pictures released Mission Impossible Part 3, they had this marketing idea, and they took all of these little red devices that played music, and they put them inside of 4,500 LA Times newspaper boxes all around the Los Angeles area. And the idea was, when you open the newspaper box to get your newspaper, the little device was supposed to play the Mission Impossible theme. Now, that sounds pretty cool, right? Except that the little box had wires coming out of it, and it happened to look like a bomb, and it inadvertently caused a bomb scare throughout the Los Angeles area. In fact, the Santa Clarita bomb squad was called to come in and blow up one of the newspaper boxes to neutralize the bomb threat. So Paramount Pictures was not very happy with how their campaign went over. It blew up in their face, so to speak. Kentucky Fried Chicken, do we have any KFC fans here? KFC, yes, some of you are willing to admit that. That's right, it's all good. I happen to be a Popeyes fan, but hey, it's all good. KFC is good. When KFC opened their first store in China back in 1987, they accidentally translated their famous slogan, finger-licking good. They missed it in Chinese. It came out, "We'll eat your fingers off." Kind of terrified the Chinese people a little bit. Didn't work out so great. And then this is the last one. This one's really fun. I love this one. There was one American t-shirt manufacturer who decided to cash in on the Pope's visit to a Latin American country. So they were going to get these t-shirts printed to say, "I saw the Pope," but they incorrectly translated in Spanish to read, "I saw the potato." Oh yeah, baby, I got the t-shirt to prove I saw the potato. Marketing blunders. Well, hold that thought for just a moment. As I mentioned, over the past 8 weeks, we have been in this series called Beautiful, and we've been looking at the Beatitudes, these series of statements that Jesus shared, these blessing statements. And the Beatitudes might be what some marketers would call added value advertising or value-added advertising. In other words, Jesus was saying, if you live your life this way, then you will be blessed. This is what it looks like to live the blessing of God. And so advertisers, marketers might call that value-added advertising. So Jesus went through this whole statement of blessings, and then he brings it home, and he gets to the last blessing that we're going to look at today. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 11, he gives this series of statements, and he ends with this. Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 11. He says, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me." Wow, what a way to finish this series of statements that Jesus was making. I don't know about you, but that's a little bit surprising. Not exactly what I expected to hear in the culmination of Jesus's most famous, you know, statements he's ever made before his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. He gets in and he says, "Blessed are the persecuted." Now, from a marketing standpoint, that kind of sounds like a marketing blunder, right? Blessed are the persecuted. Blessed are you when people insult you. How many of you hear that and say, wow, sign me up for that blessing? That sounds wonderful. Like, where can I get in on this? Like, this was like really bad marketing, right? Like, why would Jesus end this way? He's been saying these like profound statements, you know, like blessed are the meek and blessed are the pure in heart and blessed are the merciful. You're expecting something like really good. And then Jesus gets to the end and he kind of like deflates our sails with blessed are the persecuted. Why would Jesus say that? Why would Jesus do that? Well, I believe Jesus was making sure that everybody who heard him that day and all of us who read this scripture to this day, that we understood that Jesus was saying, people who follow me, life in the kingdom of God, my followers are going to live a blessed life, but it's a very different kind of life. He wanted them to understand it didn't look like everybody else's life. It's going to look very, very different. Jesus was teaching us how to live a blessed life. That's what this series has been about, right? That's what we're after in this series. I don't know about you, but if Jesus is talking about what it looks like to live a blessed life, sign me up. I want in on that. I want to hear more about that. I'm taking notes. And so this series has been about how do we live in harmony with God? How do we experience the favor of God? That's what the blessing means. How do we have God like on our side, like with us? How do we experience this beautiful life? And so that's what Jesus was teaching on. But Jesus was saying, you have to understand that this beautiful life that I'm calling you to live in my kingdom, don't equate it with comfortable. Don't equate beautiful with comfortable, because it's not always going to be comfortable, because those who follow me are choosing a different path. They are choosing a different lifestyle. It's a blessed lifestyle, but it's different from most people. It's very, very, very different, a different path. And so, in fact, Jesus gives us two word pictures to show just how different this lifestyle is. Preceding this, right after the Beatitudes, he gets into the Sermon on the Mount. And look at what he said in Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. He gives us two very powerful word pictures. He says, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Two powerful word pictures. You are the salt of the earth, verse 13. Verse 14, you are the light of the world. Now, for us, salt and light seem like pretty ordinary, common things. No big deal, right? Like, we can get as much salt as we need. Most of you probably have a salt shaker at home. If you go to a restaurant and you ask for salt, they will bring you packets of salt. No big deal, right? Light is something we take for granted. We walk into a room and we just flip a switch and we're just used to it, right? So much so that when the power goes out, we still walk in a room and flip the switch because we're so used to just having light readily available. But salt and light weren't so readily available in Jesus's time. They were very, very special things, commodities. In fact, salt was very valuable back then. Have you ever heard the statement say somebody is worth their salt or not worth their salt? Well, you know, in ancient Roman times, in Jesus's time, salt was so valuable, it was actually used as a currency. It was used as a currency. Salt was, of course, a basic seasoning and still is to this day, but salt was also one of the only ways that people could preserve food, especially meat. You had to salt it. So salt was very important and not easy to come by. It was a commodity. So when Jesus's audience would have heard these words and they would have heard salt, it would have impacted them in a little bit different way. And then light. As I said before, we're used to being able to walk into a room as modern day human beings. We just kind of take electricity for granted. We take the lights in this room for granted. We walk into a room and we can just flip a switch and have electricity and have a light at any time. But in Jesus' time, it wasn't quite that way. When the sun went down, darkness was the rule and light was the exception. It was very, very dark during Jesus's time. At nighttime, you couldn't see anything unless you had a candle or a lamp. And so people understood the value of light, the value of a lamp, the value of the sunshine, the value of getting things done before the sun went down. Now, that was then, but this is now. And salt and light are still very important for the time that we live in. What would McDonald's French fries be like without salt? Now, I know you're all very educated, healthy people who eat organic, non-GMO, gluten-free diets. You shop at Whole Foods. You're very responsible people. But come on, let's just be honest right now. There's nothing like some good old McDonald's French fries every now and then. Even I don't order the McDonald's French fries when we go through the drive-thru for our kids because I know they're bad for you. But I'm going to tell you what, there's not often that they make it past me when my kids order them that I don't at least have to sample them. And I want salt in those fries, right? They are not the same without salt. I mean, there's something in those fries, but salt is definitely one of the key ingredients. McDonald's French fries are like crack cocaine. You're like looking at the bottom of the bag trying to scoop up every fry that fell through there. You're not going to let one of them go to waste. Salt's really, really valuable in our day. And of course, light is as well. If it was totally dark in here, if we shut off all the lights and we blacked everything out, even if I had one little tiny Christmas light, you could see it up here, couldn't you? That's the power of light. That's the power of light. You know, I think about the night lights that my wife has around the house. She has these little night lights in the boys' room, and she has one in our room. And those are the tiniest lights in the whole house. But I thank God for those lights when I get up in the middle of the night and I have to go to the bathroom, and I don't stub my toe because there's that little night light there lighting up the way to the bathroom. Light is just so valuable. It's just so, so important. Think about what it's like when the lights go out. If you ever lose the power, have you ever lost power at nighttime before? It's kind of a wake-up call and a reminder of how valuable light is. A couple summers ago, we were having some electrical problems at our house where we live, and we lost electricity a few times at night. And I'm telling you, you could not see your hand in front of your face. I appreciated light a little bit more after that experience. So these are just essential things. And here's what Jesus is saying. Salt and light make a valuable difference in our lives. And the followers of Jesus, my followers, should make a difference as well. Jesus was saying all of these qualities that I've been telling you about, we're going to have them on the screen. All of these beatitudes that we've been talking about, the humble and the meek and the merciful and the pure in heart, all of these phrases that I've been using to describe what a follower of mine looks like, these are very different kind of people. First of all, they're people who are going to experience the favor of God, the blessing of God. Jesus is saying, if you want to know what it looks like to live in my kingdom, if you want to know what it looks like to walk with God and to know his favor and to live in harmony with him, this is what it looks like. I'm giving you a picture. It's a blessed life, but it's also a very, very different life. And sometimes you're going to experience some persecution because if you're following me, you're doing things differently. How many of you know nobody ever got persecuted for being just like everybody else? Have you noticed that? Do you remember high school, how cruel kids can be in high school? The kids who got picked on weren't the kids who were like everybody else. They were the kids who stuck out, right? It's human nature. So persecution, opposition sometimes comes when we're different. And Jesus is giving us a wake-up call. He's ending with a bang and he's saying, listen, it's a blessed and beautiful life, but it's a different kind of life. And sometimes it's going to bring persecution. And Jesus is saying this about salt and light. He gets into it and he says, my followers are like salt and light. He's saying that we're to be, it's like we're to be a preservative agent. Salt is an agent of preserving things. In the ancient culture, when they would have heard that, you know, salt, they would have thought about how important salt was for curing and preserving meats. And Jesus was saying, like, you're to be so powerful as one of my followers. The church is supposed to be like this agent that preserves a dying culture. How many of you know our world is falling apart? People are messed up and broken. Morality is like at an all-time low. It's just like craziness in every direction. And Jesus is saying, you're to be like that flavoring agent, that there's something different about you. Like, you know the difference between eating some popcorn with or without salt. Like, you notice it, right? And he's saying, like, when people come across you, there's supposed to be something different about you when people encounter you. And they might not even know exactly what it is. They might not quite be able to put their finger on it, but they just say, man, there's just something different about you, but in such like a positive, impactful, preserving way. And he's also saying, my followers are to be like light in a dark world where people are stumbling around, where people are lost, where people cannot find their way. He's like, you're supposed to be like a light of hope, a guide, a beacon, so that people can get around you. And you might be the only person that they know that they can go to for wisdom, that you'll pray for them, that you'll give them advice, because they're just stumbling through life. And that's what Jesus is saying. That's what these word pictures are all, they're all about. Jesus is also reminding us that salt and light are different. Salt and light are going to experience some opposition. We all need salt and light. These are essential things, right? Just two very, very essential things in our lives. But Jesus reminds us there are going to be times, as much as this world, as much as this culture needs the salt and light that I'm calling you to be, there's going to be times that people aren't going to be happy to have salt and light around. Are you with me? See, we like salt. We like salt in our French fries, don't we? We like salt in our McDonald's fries, but we don't like salt when we get salt in a cut, do we? You ever got salt in a cut before? I grew up swimming on the Gulf Coast, and, you know, it was pretty salty, that water. And when I was a kid, if you had a cut on your foot or on your leg or something like that, when you got into that salt water, you were reminded that you had that cut. And if you get salt water in your eyes, it stings a little bit. And generations ago, salt was used to cleanse wounds. In fact, you can still get saline solutions now to clean out a wound. I don't recommend it. It stings pretty bad. It'll help clean out a wound. It'll help bring healing to a wound, but it also really stings, doesn't it? Salt sometimes stings. As much as we like it, as much as it's essential, as much as it's something that we actually need in our bodies for our bodies to be balanced the right way, salt sometimes stings us. And here's what Jesus is saying. Sometimes the very thing that we need that brings healing to us will also sting us. Are you with me? Sometimes the truth stings. Sometimes the truth hurts. Let me make it practical for you. Have you ever tried to help somebody, maybe a family member, maybe a friend, maybe a coworker, somebody you love, somebody you care about? Have you ever tried to like speak the truth into their life? Like you're watching the things they're doing, the decisions they're making, their life is spiraling out of control. They're making some really bad decisions and you tried to speak the truth into their life. It was exactly what they needed to hear, but they didn't exactly receive it. They weren't too happy with you. They didn't really want to be around you anymore. They defriended you on Facebook or whatever. And you're like, look, man, I just love you enough to tell you the truth, right? Like, I'm trying to speak the truth. I'm watching things that are going on in your life, and I'm just trying to help you. But sometimes the truth stings. I'm not talking about preaching at people. I'm not talking about being condescending to people. I'm not talking about judging people. I'm talking about people that you have permission. Like, you're in their life. You care about them. But sometimes the very thing that we need stings. Salt is like that. Light is the same way. Light is essential. We can't live without it. We take it for granted. We flip the switch and we just expect it to be there. And as much as we depend upon electricity and we need the incandescent light bulb or the little swirlies that you have in your house, as much as you base your life on having light, there are times when you don't want light, right? Especially at nighttime when you're going to bed, you want the lights out. Now, my dear wife, where is she? There she is. I might get in trouble for this. My dear wife, she's very easy to get along with, very mild, very sweet. She's up here leading worship. And, you know, if you've interacted with my wife, you know how sweet she is. But there's one time you don't want to mess with my wife, when she is trying to sleep. See, we have three kids, and we haven't slept really well in about 10 years now. And so sleep is like a precious commodity in our home. And every now and then my wife will be in bed and I'll come in after her. Maybe I've stayed up late working and I'll think she's asleep and I'll kind of tiptoe into the room and I'll put the lamp on because I have some clothes I want to put away or something like that. And the light comes on and I thought she was asleep, but it's like waking up a sleeping giant. She rolls over and she's like, shut off the light now. I'm like, where did that voice come from this little sweet girl? It's like something possesses her. I'm telling you, you do not want to mess with this girl when she's trying to get some sleep because she's like, I haven't had sleep in like 10 years. I will claw your eyes out. Do not mess with my wife when she's trying to get rest. And so there are times, though, when we don't want light. And here's the truth. Do you know that there are people who are walking in darkness, darkness in their minds, darkness in their spirits, darkness to the truth, just living in ignorance. And when you try to bring them the light of the truth, the light of the gospel, sometimes they just don't want to receive it. They don't want to hear it. How many of you know some people are just happy being miserable? It's really sad, but some people are so broken and so miserable. They've been stuck in those cycles for so long. It's become first nature to them. They don't even want the light. In fact, Jesus talked about that in John chapter 3. The apostle John said that Jesus came like a light and men hated the light. He gave them light. He shined light on them. He showed them a better way. But sometimes people are so stuck in their brokenness that they don't even want to receive the light. And so there is persecution that comes at times. There is opposition that comes at times when we live as salt and light. But this is who Jesus is calling us to be. Jesus is saying there's going to be times that people are going to react against you negatively when you live the way I've called you to live. Oh, it's a blessed life. It's a life in harmony with me. You're being who I've called you to be if you're living as salt in life. But you have to know that there's going to be times you're going to experience opposition. But here's the good news. Jesus said, blessed are those who experience persecution for the sake of righteousness. Blessed are those. The favor of God is with you. God's hand is upon you. In fact, there's a reward for you. It's the kingdom of heaven is yours in the present and in the world to come. There's a blessing upon you. Listen to what Jesus says here. He says, you're in good company if you experience opposition. Matthew chapter 5, verse 12, he says, rejoice and be glad. If you experience persecution for my sake, rejoice and be glad because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you. There's a blessing that's with you. If you're persecuted for his sake, Jesus didn't mean go out and look for persecution, okay? He didn't say, like, invite persecution. He didn't say, like, you know, wear a t-shirt that says, hey, I'm a Christian, beat me up, right? Like, for the sake of Jesus, somebody slap me in the face so I can be blessed. Please, somebody curse me out. That's not what he meant. What he meant is as we live genuine lives, as his followers, we're going to experience opposition when we're righteous for his sake. When we experience persecution for his sake, not when we blunder and do stupid things, not if we're condescending and judgmental and act like we have it all together and we just talk down to people. He's not saying, oh, no, if you get any persecution for that, well, you earn that yourself, okay? You got it because there are some Christians who are different in an obnoxious way. Sadly, have you ever been around Christians who are like trying to like be different? Like, you know, that guy in the subway who's yelling and preaching at everybody and people are just trying to get to work. Like nobody's looking at him. They're walking around with signs telling everybody they're going to hell. Listen, if you experience persecution for that, like you brought it on yourself. I'm not sure that's a very effective way of getting through to people. Or that Christian who has like 50 bumper stickers all over their car, you know, and like they can't just hold a conversation with people. They're always preaching at people and judging people. No. Jesus is talking about a different way of life that's authentic and real and genuine. And when people encounter it, like it's just real. It impacts them. That's the kind of life he's talking about. And he says, if you experience opposition for that, for walking on this earth the way I walked in this earth, for loving people and serving people, speaking the truth in love, there's a blessing that is upon you. There's a blessing that's upon you. I think this morning what we have to do is we have to examine ourselves because we're not supposed to go out and look for persecution. But I think that if we're not experiencing any opposition at all in our lives, I think it's time that we ask ourselves a big time question. Is there anything really different about me? Let's just have a moment, a come to Jesus, an honest moment with God this morning. If no one is noticing anything different about me, why not? Right? If you're not so like forgiving and so generous, and if you don't just have like such a diversity of friends because you love all kinds of different people and you're just not materialistic, and if there's just not something different about you that nobody's noticing, I think the question we have to ask ourselves is why not? Because Jesus is saying that his followers are going to be different to the point that people are going to notice. Once again, I'm not saying you have to go out and do all of these crazy things to draw attention to yourself, but he's saying there should be something different about you. And if you're walking with the Lord and somebody's come up to you at some point in time recently and said, you know, there's just something different about you. That's a really good thing. And if you haven't had that in a long time, it's okay. We're just taking spiritual inventory of our lives today. We're just saying, God, let me just look inside myself and ask, am I living any differently than the people around me? Is there anything about me that's different? Am I just generous and just loving and just caring and just forgiving? Or am I really just pretty much living life like everybody else? That's what I believe Jesus is calling us to consider today because he's saying, true followers of mine, they're salt and light in this world. And if you call yourself a Christian, there's going to be something different, but different in a beneficial, difference-making way. And Jesus is asking us today to look at our lives and examine the way we're living. Now, I want to give you three practical things. This is a good time to take out those note sheets we gave you if you haven't taken it out already. I want to give you three action words to end with that are true of salt and light people. Three action words. Here's the first one. Give. Salt and light people, give. Everybody say give. Give. Make sure you're awake. Salt and light people, followers of Jesus, are givers. Jesus calls us to radical generosity with our lives, with our finances, with our times. Like our disposition in life is that we're givers. We're oriented towards serving people. That's who Jesus calls us to be. He calls us to be like him. He was the greatest giver of all time. For God so loved the world that he gave. Gave his son, gave everything. And so here's a question for you. Is there anything different about us, about the way we give? Do you know one of the reasons that Christianity absolutely spread like wildfire in the Roman Empire and overtook and saturated the Roman Empire? How many of you know Christianity was born into a very hostile culture? You know, if anybody thinks we have it difficult now, hello, Roman Empire, they were crucifying people. But within a few centuries, Christianity completely overtook the Roman Empire, saturated. You know what happened? One of the things was generosity. Christians were known for radical generosity. They were taking care of the poor. They were taking care of children that people had thrown out on the streets. They were loving each other. They were blessing people. They were just so radically generous that all of these pagan Romans were like, I don't know what these people got, but I want to be a part of it. And it just spread and just took over the place. And so let me ask you this question. How are you doing with the giving of your three T's here? Your time, your talents, and your treasure. Think about each one of those. You know, time is like the commodity and the currency of life, isn't it? When's the last time you gave some of your time to serve somebody else, to serve the church, to meet somebody's need? How about your finances? How are you living? You know, preachers used to say when I was a kid, your checkbooks reflect your priorities. They reflect your relationship with God. I'm not guilt tripping you. I'm saying this is what a follower of Jesus looks like, and we have to take stock of our lives. Let me ask you this question. When's the last time a friend noticed that you were so plugged in and so serving that they're like, why do you give so much time to your church? Like every time I see you, you're always like serving somebody else. Like, man, you need to like get a hobby or something. When's the last time we were accused of that? When's the last time your accountant sat down with you at the end of the tax season and they were like, are you sure you can afford to give this much to your church and to charities and things like that? Because that's the life that Jesus calls us to. He calls us to something so much greater than ourselves. He calls us to be givers, a lifestyle of giving and generosity. It's one of the sure marks of being a Christ follower. Listen to me. This is a beautiful life. This is not a guilt trip message. This isn't the preacher's trying to get. I don't want something from you. I want something for you. Jesus came to set us free from making life all about ourselves. And I'm telling you, one of the keys to getting set free is to become a giver. The scripture says it's more blessed to give than to receive. Just try it. Just dip your toes in the water and start giving. Just find somebody in need. Just find something. Listen, you can be a part. Certainly, I want your finances to be blessed. You should give and be a part of the giving, the offerings at this church, because this is a life-giving church that's reaching people. Just see the blessing that comes on your life. Just see how it changes you when your disposition becomes, God, I'm a giver because I want to be like you. Here's the second action word, stand. Everybody say stand. Salt and light people stand. What I'm talking about is taking a stand for what you know is right and taking a stand against what you know is wrong. Once again, I'm not talking about being preachy to everybody. I'm not talking about being condescending. I'm not talking about being holier than thou because we're positioned as servants, but we also have to take a stand at some point in time. See, historically, Christianity has made its biggest impacts and it's also drawn the most fire when Christians took a stand for what we believed in. When we took a stand. I'm not talking about ganging up and trying to become a huge voting bloc. You know, that's been tried before. That was tried in the 80s and 90s, and that earned Christians a really bad reputation. I'm talking about in your personal life. Like, what is it about us, the way we're living, the way we're talking, the things that we're choosing to do, how we're spending our money, how we're living our lives? Is there anything different about us? Is there anything countercultural about us? Listen, I'm thankful for relevance. I want to play contemporary worship music in church. I want you to dress and be comfortable when you come to church. I want to answer questions that people are asking. So I'm all for relevance in the church, but I want to remind you that to be called to be a follower of Jesus is to be called to be countercultural. The gospel is a countercultural thing. We ain't trying to be like everybody else. When was the last time that forgiveness was in style? When was the last time that like loving your neighbor as yourself was in style? When was the last time that when somebody slaps you, you turn the other cheek, that was in style? Or when somebody asks you to go, you know, 1 mile, you go the extra mile, you give the cloak off your back. That's what Jesus said his followers look like. When was the last time that sexual purity and the sacredness of sexuality and our sex-saturated culture, when's the last time that was in style? Do you get what I'm saying this morning? To be a follower of Jesus in its very nature is counter-cultural. And so we have to look at our lives and say, are we living any differently? Do we have any different values? Do we talk about the same things? Do we spend our money the same way? Do we do everything like everybody else? What distinguishes us? What are we willing to take a stand for? Here's the third action word, because you guys are getting really quiet on me now. The third one is love. Everybody say love. Come on, say it like you take a deep breath. Love. Pastor Jeremy's going to preach a little easier on this point. Love. All we need is love. All we need is love. All right. Love. A love for one another. It's supposed to stick out as something unusual, something different in the world, something that makes people take notice. In fact, Jesus said this in John chapter 13, verse 35. He says, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples by your love for one another. If you love one another. If you love one another. He's like, don't even worry about loving the world out there. If church people can just love each other first. Inside the church, people will take notice. Yeah, we'll get to loving the world, but like love each other first. Love each other first. It's a hallmark of being a follower of Jesus. In a world where most people are taught to look out for me and mine, it's all about number one. It's all about you, baby. That's what the world is marketing to you nonstop in this iPhone, iPad, me generation that we live in. Jesus calls us to something radically different. Love. Imagine that. Saying, what would it look like if a group of people got together and just put other people before themselves? just loved on people. Didn't matter what color they were. Didn't matter what socioeconomic background people came from. Didn't matter what their ethnicity was or how they dressed. But if people just came together, this group of people who say they love me, what would happen if they loved each other? Jesus understood that in this world that we live in, love is the secret weapon. It's the secret weapon that wins people over. I want to have a church like that. I really do. I want Redemption to be a church where people walk in here. They might think we're crazy, these bunch of people singing and clapping their hands in a movie theater. What are these people doing? But I know one thing. Many people seem to really love each other. They love each other. And there was people there from all different backgrounds and places, different colors, different walks of life. And man, I don't know quite what they believe, but I know one thing. Those people love each other. Had such a great time in our life group this past week at our house, and we had some new faces and people joining us, and I just love looking around my living room, and we were fellowshipping, and we have pizza night at our life group because our life group is better than yours. It's awesome, and we were having pizza, and it was great, and I was looking around. I just love seeing people come together, become a church family. Jesus said salt and light people are people of love, and so I want to close with this as the worship team comes back. I want to say this to you. The Beatitudes are an invitation to a different kind of life. What we've looked at over the last 8 weeks, and I hope it's really touched your spirit and your soul if you've been here and gotten into your heart. Jesus was showing us a picture of what it looks like to live a different kind of life. Life in his kingdom. Life in the ways of his kingdom, which are not the ways of this world. And he says it's a blessed and beautiful life. But he's reminding us, by the way he ended the Beatitudes, that it's a different kind of life. It's a different kind of life, and there's going to be a time when we face opposition. It's going to happen. But here's the good news, the final blessing that he has for us in verse 10. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. There's a kingdom that nobody can take away from you when you experience persecution. There's going to be times you're going to love on people. There's going to be times you're going to let your little light shine. You're going to be salt. You're going to take a stand. Maybe you're not going to do things in an unethical way at work like everybody else is doing it to get ahead. Maybe you're going to say, I can't be around that influence. I can't do this. I can't do that. And somebody's going to say, what's the matter? What's wrong with you? You think you're better than everybody else? And you're going to face some opposition. You might get passed over for a job promotion. You might have a family member get upset with you. Somebody might not like your little light shining, but here's the truth. Jesus said there is a blessing waiting for you. Yours is the kingdom of heaven. I'll take that deal. I will take that deal any day. I want to end by telling you a story. Last week we talked about Corrie Ten Boom. If you were here last week, I'll catch you up. But Corrie Ten Boom and her family, they were devout Christians who lived in the Netherlands and Holland during World War II, during the Nazi occupation, and they were part of the Dutch resistance. In fact, they helped several people go into hiding, many Jews. They helped rescue many people. Their home was set up as a hiding place. In fact, Corrie Ten Boom went on to write a book, and there was a movie produced called The Hiding Place. They helped oversee a network of hiding places that helped people, especially Jews, escape the Nazis. And it's estimated that they saved something like 800 lives. Well, sadly, Corrie Ten Boom and her whole family were arrested. They were placed in concentration camps. Her dad died shortly after they were arrested in prison. Corrie and her older sister, Betsy, ended up in Ravensbrück, right outside of Berlin, a notorious concentration camp. And her sister, Betsy, never gave up on her faith. She preached to people. She loved on people. She never was, her faith was never shaken. She was such an example to Corrie. And she died 15 days before Corrie was released from the concentration camp. And she famously said to her sister, as she laid in her arms dying, she said, there's no pit so deep that God's love is not deeper still. And she said, Corrie, one day we're going to get out of this concentration camp and we're going to tell people that Jesus will go with you into any pit. There's no pit so deep, because you know why? He stayed faithful to us here in this concentration camp. And she really believed that. She believed she was going to see the day that she'd tell her story. Well, she died. She didn't make it. But Corrie went on to tell that story, to preach that story all around Europe. She went to something like 60 countries and told people her story. There's no pit so low that God won't go into that pit with you. She told people how God was with her, even in that concentration camp. And I look at that and I say, how did she hold on to her faith? How did she not lose her faith? How did she not give up? And here's what I want to say to you this morning, Redemption Community Church. She held on to a promise. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness. If ever there was a poster child for being persecuted for righteousness, it was Corrie Ten Boom. All she did was save people. She got thrown into a concentration camp. But here's what she held on to. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And there's a blessing for you No matter what price you have to pray to follow Jesus, there is a blessing for you. And I want to encourage you, you hold on to that. No matter what opposition you face in your marriage, in your family, in your workplace, in your sphere of friends, no matter what you have to give up, whatever Jesus calls you to give up, you give it up because you're trading it in for the kingdom of heaven. And that's the blessing we hold on to. Would you stand with me this morning as I pray for you? I want to pray you out this morning. Come on, you can't encounter the Beatitudes and not be changed. You can't encounter this way of life and say, Jesus, help me to follow you. Help me to follow you. Don't let me just hear a message like this and be the same person. But God, I'm trading the kingdom of this world for your kingdom. I want to pray for you this morning. I want to pray especially for those of you, maybe you've never made a decision to follow Jesus. I'm not talking about you went to Sunday school, you went to catechism, all of those things are wonderful. But I'm saying for yourself, have you ever come to the place where you said, Jesus, I place my trust in you. I want to follow you. I want to experience this blessed way of life that you talked about. If that's you today, I just want to invite you to do that today. Make today your day so you can write it down and say, June 12th, 2016, I made a decision to place my faith in Jesus, to be a part of his kingdom, to be one of his followers. If that's you, I'm going to pray for you first. I'm going to pray for you first. And then I think all of us can pray for grace and strength to be the people who's called us, he's called us to be. Because listen to me, if we don't live this out, this different way of life, it's not that we're just in danger of missing a blessing. We're literally in danger of missing out on who Jesus has called us to be. And I don't know about you, but I want to be everything that Jesus called me to be and do everything that he's called me to do. So let me pray for you this morning. Jesus, we thank you for your word. We thank you for the truth of your word that sets us free. Jesus, we thank you that you rescued us from this life of just making it all about us, God. And you've invited us to be a part of your kingdom, God, to know you, to know this blessed and beautiful life. God, I pray for every person in this place who would say, today I want to make a decision to follow Jesus. Maybe today I want to recommit my life to Christ for the first time in many years. God, would you just give them the courage to just whisper the simplest and humblest of prayer. Jesus, I believe in you. Jesus, I turn to you as my Savior. Jesus, I want to follow you. Jesus, I leave whatever I have to leave behind, any sins, anything from the past, to follow you. God, I know if they pray that prayer today, you heard that prayer and you received them. Now, Father, I'm praying for every person in this place, for grace to live as salt and light in this world that we live in this dark and decaying world that we find ourselves in. And God, I'm praying for strength when we face opposition. And God, may we hold on to that hope, to that truth, to that blessing that for us, we've been given the kingdom of heaven. We thank you for it in Jesus' name.